In a few short weeks, many of us will participate in an ancient ritual by bringing an entire tree into the house. I'm Charity Nebbe. On the next Talk of Iowa, it's Horticulture Day. DNR Forester Mark Vitosh is here today, and we're going to talk about Christmas trees, how to choose the right tree for you, how to care for the tree that you choose. We'll also talk about alternatives to the traditional cut tree. Many people are buying potted evergreens. You can also dress up a couple of different kinds of houseplants. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron is also here, and he and Mark will answer your questions about yards, gardens, plants, and trees. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send us email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be along in a few minutes to answer your questions. But we're going to start today with an ancient and somewhat strange ritual that is bringing a Christmas tree into your home. Mark Vitosh is a forester with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And Mark, in Iowa, how are Christmas trees grown?
Most in Iowa, most growers are what we call choose and cut growers. So you have a farm where you can actually go out to the farm and walk over the hills and through the areas, and sometimes walk through the woods to get to the pasture or the area where the trees are planted. And in most cases, you can walk out, you can choose your own tree, and in a lot of situations, you can cut your own tree. And some farms, they actually have people out there that will assist you in cutting those. But in most cases, the whole family can walk out, pick their tree, cut it, take it into a processing area where they often shake the needles out. They can often bag it, and then they often help you load that tree and put you on your way.
Of the Christmas trees that are sold in Iowa, do you have any idea what percentage of those would be Iowa-grown trees?
Well, I mean, in most cases, most operations, if they're a choose and cut operation, those trees are actually grown, I mean, right there. So you're picking a fresh tree. But in a lot of cases, if the growers don't have enough and they want to add to what they have available, they'll often bring trees in from other locations or even sometimes other growers. I myself help a farmer in the area. I have worked for him for 5 years. We sell 500 to 700 trees out of our own fields, but then we probably bring in 200 trees from sometimes local growers, sometimes a grower in Wisconsin, depending on what species we're looking for and stuff like that to support what we have available. So it really varies, but most of the growers, a lot of times, most of the trees that they sell locally are stuff that's grown in Iowa. And then again, they'll bring some trees in from other states sometimes to help support their numbers.
Since you have a hands-on experience with this, how old are most of the trees that are sold?
They are somewhere between 7 and 15 years old, depending on the size. So on average, it probably takes about 7 years from the time that that tree's planted. And the thing you got to remember, though, a lot of times those trees are 3 to 4 years old or 2 to 4 years old when they're planted. Then it takes somewhere between 7 and 15 years. And a lot of that depends on the soil conditions, the tree species. Some grow, we grow a lot of pines in Iowa, but we also grow a lot, we're starting to really shift towards firs, and the firs sometimes take a little longer. So some of those trees may take 12 to 13 years to get to the size. And the average size that people like to cut is somewhere between 6 and 8 feet. But the thing I have noticed working in the business a little bit is you get a lot of people with these high ceilings now, so they're not afraid to get that 10, 12-footer. We've even sold some 15-footers.
Wow.
And people come prepared. They come with the big flatbed truck and the whole family. They, you know, get it on there and get it in the house. So it really varies. But it can take there's a lot of time and a lot of investment to get those trees to that size. And there's a lot of work to get those trees that size, to get them to the quality so people can come and pick them out.
How, if you're a Christmas tree grower, how do you maintain your tree stock? As your trees are cut, how do you plant new trees and make sure that you always have trees within that 7 to 15 year?
That's a great question.
Window.
And it's planting a lot of trees. And that's, you know, one of the criticisms for Christmas trees sometimes is, well, you're cutting trees down. Well, you have to replant those trees too. So what you do on most cases, on an average acre, which is about the size of a football field, you might grow anywhere from 800 to 1,000 trees on that acre, sometimes spaced maybe 6 feet apart within the row and maybe 8 feet to 9 feet between the trees. So what you do in a lot of cases is once those trees are cut, you'll actually come in and you'll cut the stump down all the way to the ground. Some people even come in with a little stumper and dig it up a little bit. And then fairly close to that stump or where that stump was, you plant a new tree. So every year that you have an area, and the challenge is usually within most fields or areas, you may sell trees out of that area for probably 3 to 5 years and then kind of be done and then shift to a new area where you have trees that are saleable. Because of soils and other conditions, you may have in that area quite a variety of growth spurts and maybe depending on species and stuff like that. So that area, you might have saleable trees for 3 to 5 years, but then that area kind of goes dormant for 4 to 6, 7, 8 years before you get trees again. So you have to shift. And the average grower in Iowa, most of them are probably what I would call more hobby growers. They're not in it for their life. And they may have 3 to 8 acres. You have to have quite a few acres to really be able to sustain a full-time business. And that's very difficult to do. And most growers in Iowa are retail and not wholesale. So there is a lot of work and a lot of effort, but you need quite a few acres to keep that going. So every year you're going to be replanting, you know, depending on how many you're selling, you're going to be probably replanting at least that many every year.
This is an agricultural crop, but it's so different from most agricultural crops in that you are thinking in terms of decades, not in terms of one growing season. But what do you need to do to manage the growth of these trees? Because, of course, when somebody goes and looks for a Christmas tree, they want something symmetrical. They want it nice and full. How do you do that?
Well, the interesting thing to your comment there is some people want them nice and neat, but the last 5 years I've been working is I'll walk by a tree that I think is the ugliest tree I've ever seen, and 2 hours later, a family will go by and think it's the blessing. It is the tree. So as with everything else, you can't judge a book by its cover always because everybody has their own taste. But in general, yes, people like some form or some shape, some uniformity. And that usually starts 2 or 3 years after that tree's planted. So the thing you have to remember is once you plant those trees, you got to plant them. And in most cases, they don't do a lot of watering. We really try to match the trees to the site. So for the first 3 to 5 years and sometimes longer, you have to do some type of weed control. Basically, in a 3 to 5 foot circle or a couple foot circle around each tree, you have to have no grass. So in the case of growing trees, weeds or grass are weeds. So we have to keep those out. We can use mulch. We can use light cultivation. We can use registered herbicides. A lot of different things can be used. And in some cases, because they are an ag product, and depending on the soil, some growers will add fertilizer to try to improve growth that way. But somewhere between 2 to 3 years after planting, once you start getting 12 inches or more of top growth, that's when you have to do what we call shearing. That's where the shaping starts to come in. And basically every year, once you start shearing to the time that that tree's cut, you have to shear that tree every year. And with pines, because of their growth patterns and where their buds are, we have to shear those usually mid-June up till the early part of July. And if you shear them too early, they don't respond well, and if you shear them too late, you don't get buds for the next year. So you usually cut a portion of that top off, and then you use either a large knife or some other type of shearing equipment to actually shape that And then in that process, too, you actually have to start creating what they call the handle. And that's below. You have to start pruning some of the lower branches. So when you cut that tree down, you can stick it in the tree stand. It's very difficult if the branches are all the way to the bottom. So you have creating the handle and also shaping that tree. So again, if you start shearing a tree at, let's say, the fourth or fifth year and you don't sell it to year 15, that's quite a few years of work. And depending on how many you're doing, that can be quite a bit. And with the firs, we can actually shear those later in the year, so in the fall or early winter. So you have a little flexibility there, but it takes a lot of work.
Let me ask a question that's probably going to make you wince. What's the difference between a pine and a fir?
That's a great, great, great question. And actually, it's to me, a lot of it's texture. And two, a lot of times the firs will tend to, well, it really varies. To me, a lot of the firs are usually softer. They tend to have a softer texture, softer feel to them. The pines might be a little stiffer, depending on the type of pine. Scotch pines are pretty stiff, but like white pines also have kind of a soft. But white pines tend to not have branches that are as strong. So if you like those big ornaments and balls and different things hanging on there, they're not as sturdy, where the firs tend to be pretty sturdy. And I don't know if it's an East Coast influence or whatever, but there I've just noticed quite a bit of shift to some reason people like firs. They maybe it's the smell, the scent, or just the way they shape and how you can hang ornaments on them, and also how trees are sheared actually on the farms has an impact on how well ornaments will hang and stuff too. And what most growers have learned is their audience, the clients, will help them figure out if they're doing it right. Because I walk out in this farm that I work at a lot of times and people will just talk, and you can find out if they like your trees or they don't like your trees. What they say when they come pay is often different than what they say to their family member out in the field. So often you just listen, and that's how you learn. Is the clients will actually tell if they like a tree that's more open. And what growers will often do is they'll actually shear some one way that are more open and shear others that are dense. So they have a variety out there because, like I said, there really seems to be quite an array of what people like out there.
So when you get that tree home, how do you keep it fresh for as long as possible?
The big thing is get a fresh cut before you put it in the stand. You know, usually if you cut it at the farm and you go right home and you put it up, you're probably okay. But if you're going to wait a couple hours, or a lot of times people will wait a couple days to put it up, as soon as you get home, stick it in a bucket of water in the garage, somewhere cool, and leave it that way. And then as soon as you get in the house, keep it in water and do not let the water run out. There's all kinds of different wives' tales, put sugar, do this, do that. We've been putting Christmas trees in our house for 10 years. I've never put any additives, and I've never let the water run out. Don't let the water run out, and you should be okay. Keep it away from heat sources, too.
You're listening to Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. We're talking about Christmas trees right now, and we'll talk a little bit more about Christmas trees in a moment with DNR Forester Mark Vitosh. Richard Giron, ISU Extension Horticulturist, is also here, and we will take your questions as well. Please join the conversation, 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and ISU Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron is here with us now. Hi, Richard. Oh, I believe Richard's there. Hi, Richard.
Good morning.
Hi there. How are you?
Just fine.
Good. And Mark Vitosh, who's a forester with the Department of Natural Resources, is also here. We've been talking about Christmas trees. And Richard, what do you do for a Christmas tree in your house?
I either buy a cut one or go out and cut one. And by the way, Mark, I'm the one that bought that ugly-looking tree.
That's all right. I mean, my point was, it's just, it's really interesting how much variation there is in what people want. And it's just what people do. And I just find it kind of fascinating.
Well, we're going to get to calls here in just a second, but I want to talk about some Christmas tree alternatives as well. We're not going to talk about artificial trees. I don't think we need any horticultural advice on artificial trees today. But something that my family has done for many years is buy a potted tree and then plant it in the springtime. if you want to do that, and we've had mixed success over the years. We've probably been doing this for, I don't know, 20 years now. But if you want to do that, what do you need to know, Mark?
Well, you want to get a tree species that's adaptive to your area. You don't want, let's say, Virginia pine that grows normally in the south or something like that. You want I won't call it a native, but you want a tree species that's going to be adaptive to that area, say a white pine or Norway spruce or something like that. The other thing is, it's as you said, with mixed results, it's very difficult to do, because what you're basically doing is you're taking a plant that wants to be in the ground, you're sticking it in the house for a couple of weeks in conditions that are very warm, and then all of a sudden you got to do something with this plant to get it back in the right environment. And I think the best thing to do if you are going to do something like that is to actually dig your hole ahead of time, cover it actually with hay or straw, and put a board over it and keep that hole basically warm so that ground doesn't freeze. Keep the tree outside and only keep it inside for maybe a week, and then get it outside, get it in the ground, and get it planted right away, and try to keep it away from a heat source. Another alternative to me is plant some trees in the yard that can be that tree that you decorate every year in the yard, and then, again, still maybe get one for inside the house. 'Cause the thing you got to remember, as we said, these trees continually get replanted. They're renewable resources. Most of our communities and our areas have recycling programs. A lot of people will throw these cut trees in ponds. I take my tree every year and put it in the back and hang cones and different things on it. It's great bird habitat. It's a renewable resource that we can continue to use. So we're not throwing these things in the landfill. So I think there's other alternatives like that. I planted a spruce tree for my dad 15 years ago. He decorates that tree every year in the yard, and that's the Christmas tree. But he also has a tree that he uses in the house, too.
Richard, what are some of the other alternatives that you've seen people use over the years?
Well, they can buy a Norfolk Island pine, which is a house plant. It has needle-like foliage.
I've had mixed success on those as well.
Well, they're not that hard. If you give them good, consistent care, they perform quite well usually. Basically, what they need is bright light. They don't need direct sun, but bright light. And you need to keep the soil moist, so check the soil frequently. And when the surface gets dry to the touch, go ahead and water thoroughly. So if you give it good, consistent care, they will oftentimes do very well.
And my problem has been primarily feline with them.
Oh,
so
okay.
that's a totally different problem.
Right. So if the care is not very good, or it has a poor environment, what typically happens is the bottom limbs will tend to dry up and turn kind of a grayish green and eventually fall off. So if you have a problem, that's typically what you see first, is the plant will lose its bottom limbs. But you can use that as a Christmas tree. You can hang ornaments on it. It has branches and tiers, so it's actually quite useful as a Christmas tree.
And I've seen some that will get quite large, too. I mean,
absolutely.
That plant will last a long time in a house with proper care, so you could get multiple years from it if you want.
All right. And if you have any questions about Christmas trees or anything else, feel free to give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Eldon is on the line from Atkins. Hello, Eldon.
Good morning, folks. I have a question about trees that are able to hold their needles longer in the home. And another one about the Fraser fir as one that I really like because it's so soft. And just hear your comments. Thank you.
Well, in general, Eldon, the pines and the firs tend to be pretty good in needle retention. And a lot of that, you know, obviously with a fresh tree, if you cut a tree on a local farm, those, if you keep them watered, you can go four, sometimes even 5 or 6 weeks on a lot of these and still not have a problem. The one species I see some problems with sometimes are some of the spruce. They don't tend to hold their needles as long. So a lot of times you'll go to growers and on those tags, actually in the fields, they'll say 2 to 3 weeks of needle retention. So often they'll encourage folks if they're going to buy a spruce. And blue spruce seems to be the one that people like. And it's one that's very stiff. It's very sharp, and it must be people that have cats and stuff, because I don't know if I was a cat if I touch this thing. But that's the one species. That's the one species that seems to have some challenges with retention. But in general, with fresh trees, I see different comments in literature and stuff. But the pines tend to be fairly long, and then the firs are right there, and then kind of the spruce in behind it. But it's all pretty close. And the Frasers, I agree. Frasers in Iowa, there's more and more growers growing those. And there's another one called Canaan fir, and there's a few other, one even called Korean, and some others that growers are starting to grow. The one challenge growing Fraser in Iowa is they like a really cool, moist condition. So growers usually have to have a north-facing hill or slope, really good environment to grow those. And that's where the Canaans have kind of come in. They're very similar to the Frasers, and they grow in kind of a little tougher conditions.
So this invites a question. Obviously, most people buy their Christmas trees, their cut Christmas trees, right after Thanksgiving or in the week or so right after Thanksgiving. But I have seen Christmas decorations going up earlier and earlier. Are there people who are trying to bring trees in earlier than that?
Oh, I'm sure just like everything else, they could. But in general, the busy weeks usually are that weekend right after Thanksgiving and the next week, and then it kind of peters through from there.
Okay.
But most people usually, like everything else, are still kind of waiting until at least Thanksgiving. Friday for us is usually a very – Friday, Saturday, and Sunday after Thanksgiving are usually very good days in Christmas trees. And then that following week is usually pretty good too. And a lot of it depends on the weather. If you got a young family and trying to get everybody out, but it's amazing. We've been out there in the snow and stuff, and here come four little ones and hats on and gloves and the sled and everything else. And a lot of people are looking for establishing traditions again in their family. And I've noticed a lot of young families coming out with one in their arms and trying to start that new tradition again. And people are looking for those opportunities. And really, it's a cheap tradition. Christmas trees can range from $25 up to $100 or $150, depending on what you're – so there's things for almost every price range out there, depending on what you want to spend.
All right. Eldon, thank you so much for your call. And Richard, we've got a question for you next from Sandy in Cedar Falls. She says she just had someone tell me that it's better to wait until spring to cut off the hosta foliage because leaving it on over the winter helps protect the plant. I've always cut mine off in the fall, but I'm wondering if that was the wrong thing to do. Which perennial should be left until spring to cut off the leaves?
It doesn't really matter that much. You can do it either in late fall or early spring. It really kind of depends upon how much time you have to do it. And so if you have the time to do it, I'd probably do it in late fall. But you can do it in spring if you don't have the time. Now, one thing that might happen if you do it in late fall would be that if we have a early spring, the plants may start to grow a little bit sooner than they would if the debris was still there. And then if we have a frost or freeze, there might be some damage that might occur to those newly emerging shoots. So you might see some damage there. But it's short-term damage. They should recover very quickly. So it really depends as far as your time.
All right. Sandy, I hope that answers your question. And Judy's on the line now from Moline. Hello, Judy.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question is about white pine trees. In about 8 years ago, we planted many of them, and they've done beautifully until this, perhaps last year and this year, we're noticing some that are dying. And somebody told us that we might have turpentine beetles.
Well,
I kind of peeled the bark back on a dead one yesterday, and I did notice some little grayish-black beetle-like things. And what do we do about them?
Well, Judy, these could actually be what generally we call bark beetles. There are a number of different species of bark beetles out there that will attack trees, especially pine trees. The one thing, though, is these beetles are often secondary organisms that are attacking a tree that's already stressed. They're often not the primary attacker. So I'll tell you the one thing that we've been seeing – in eastern Iowa and parts of central Iowa is white pines tend to like moist, well-drained soils. Well, the last couple years we've had some very wet springs and even some wet summers. Now, it has been drier lately, but I work a lot with different tree plantations, Christmas tree growers and stuff, and in the last 2 years we've lost a number of white pines in these different plantations. And usually what happens is it's not whole rows of trees or whole areas. It's a tree here, a tree there. And often if you dig in those areas, the soil drainage usually isn't quite as good. And those roots are actually getting too moist, saturated. And even a tree that's been in the ground for 10, 12, sometimes even 15 years, if it gets too moist too long, those roots become stressed, and then those trees become stressed, and they often start to die. And often these beetles come in secondarily to attack them. So you may basically, what you may want to do around some of these trees that have died is just to see what the soil conditions are like. And if they die fairly quickly, a lot of times they'll just kind of turn an off color and then they'll be dead.
Yeah.
That often can be connected to soil conditions. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have an active beetle that's being more aggressive, but I would check your soil conditions first, and I would also check the patterns. If there's just areas here and there where it's happening, maybe do some digging in those areas to see what if you have a lot of clay and stuff. If you have a lot of clay in some of those sites, soils vary so much that you can have a tree die here, and then 10 feet away or even 15 feet away, you can have trees that look perfectly fine. And we okay. see this quite a bit, and we've seen it a lot in the last 2 years.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Judy. If you have a question, give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mark Vitosh is a forester, so he can answer your tree questions today. And Richard Giron knows everything about everything else. Right, Richard?
Maybe. I'm not sure about that.
So give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. And Bruce is on the line from Cedar Rapids. Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. I have a Fraser fir that I bought from, I guess you'd call it a tree farm. The guy had a little bit of everything. And I planted it the same time I planted a larch. And the larch is probably gained 12 feet or so. It's really grown a lot in the last 8, 10 years. The fir just seems like it's staying right where it's at. It's grown several feet, but it almost looks like one of those witch's brooms on the terminus of it. It's so thick up in there, and it's real thick. I mean, a lot of branches there, but the rest of the tree's not doing much growing. Could it be kind of like an accidental dwarf?
Boy.
A deafening silence.
I'm not sure on that. Obviously, when you purchase a tree, most trees are grown from seed, and you will get some natural variation as far as growth rate and size and height and spread. So it's possible it may be a genetic factor. Maybe that one won't get as big as they normally do. That's a possibility. Maybe it's the site has some effect on it too. But the actual witch's brooms that we see on occasionally on evergreens, they usually don't occur that often or frequently. So maybe it's something more genetic, possibly.
Okay. Well, it's kind of nice that it isn't getting huge or anything. I mean, but it's kind of interesting to me because I've got a little bit of everything here, and I just thought that was kind of unique.
First thing I would think of, though, just in general, Bruce, is just the site in general. If it's not as cool and moist, like I said, Frasers tend to like where I see them grow best is on like east and north exposures. If it's an area that's maybe a little hotter, a little warmer, they may not be growing as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, larch is one, though. It likes very moist conditions.
Oh, it's loving it.
Yeah,
and it's beautiful,
you know,
right
if
now.
It's growing, the fir probably should be too.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool down here. We're in a swale down here.
Okay, so it should be
actually.
It should be a pretty decent situation for it. But
yeah. Well, it's entertaining to see that it's not doing much, but it's looking nice.
As long as the color's good and everything, yeah. And you're not seeing off color, you know, like you say, I just keep hanging with it and enjoy what you get.
Oh, yeah. I think it's like I like a little bit of uniqueness in this stuff. So.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Bruce.
Yep.
And before we get to the break, we have an email from Laura who says, can you recommend a recipe for mixing artificial soil for houseplants and overwintering plants? I have a problem with black insects, similar but blacker and smaller than fruit flies.
Okay. As far as if you want to make an actual potting mix, you can. You can use, for example, one-third garden soil, one-third peat, and also one-third perlite. The perlite is a white material. It's very light. And if you add those together in equal amounts or volumes, that is a fairly good potting mix.
Okay. And what about her insect problem?
Well, if the insect problem is make sure that your potting soil that you choose does drain well, and make sure that you don't keep it too wet. If you have extremely wet soils, those tend to lead to the insect problems.
All right. Thank you so much for your email, Laura. And, of course, you can email us as well. The number or the email address is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also call us. 866-780-9100 is the number. 866-780-9100. With me today are Richard Duran from Iowa State University Extension and Mark Vitosh, who's a forester with the DNR. It's Horticulture Day, and we're taking your questions. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and here with me are Iowa State University Extension Horticulturist Richard Duran and Forester Mark Vitosh. He's with the Department of Natural Resources, and they're here to answer your questions. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org, and we're going to head to the phones next. Rod is on the line in Garden Grove. Hello, Rod.
Yes.
Hi, what's your question today?
I have a grapevine that I need to move. It's in the way of a new machine shed that went up. But I'm wondering if it's actually feasible to move a grapevine like that, how heavily you need to prune it, the best time of year to do it before you move it.
Okay. You need to move that when, by when?
Oh, the building is already, I can move it any time I want.
Okay.
It's whatever's best for the plant.
It's very difficult to move an established grapevine. They have a very deep taproot. And typically when you try to dig it up, you're just not going to get enough of it, and it's not going to survive. But what you can do is you can go out in March and take some of the vines, last year's growth, and cut those into like 12-inch sections. And then tie them together with some twine, put them in a plastic bag with some lightly moistened peat moss, and then place them in the refrigerator. And then in early to mid-April, take them out of the refrigerator and put them directly in the ground vertically, and have just the upper bud on the cutting just above the ground level. The rest is buried in the soil. And those are hardwood cuttings, and grapes actually root quite well by hardwood cuttings. So I would do that. Take your cutting material probably around early March, put them in the refrigerator, and then put them actually in the ground sometime in April.
All right.
And then you can make as many as you want. And if any of those actually do grow, if you need to, then you could transplant them the next year. But once they've been in the ground more than a year, they're very hard to transplant.
I was afraid of that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Good luck with that, Rod.
Okay.
Thanks a lot for your call. And next up, we've got Mark on the line in East Moline. Hello, Mark.
Hi, guys. I'm talking about pests, and it seems to be I don't have many pests in my place at all. An occasional fly, which I hunt down venomously. However, when I bring some fresh fruits home, there seems to be a miniature little housefly, and it just is annoying as heck. And I, you know, usually hunt them down too, but I'm wondering where they're coming from, because it's, you know, I don't think they're coming from the outside. Can you give me a clue what that pest is?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what that is. Now, one possibility is they're not coming on the fruit, but possibly maybe they're coming from a damp area in the house somewhere. For example, possibly from some type of sink or bathtub where you have some material that tends to accumulate on the pipes, on the inside pipes, basically gunk, so to speak. And like fruit flies, I believe, will sometimes basically live in that material, and that's where they come from. So it's possibly they might be coming from like the kitchen sink or maybe the bathtub. And one way to see if that's a possibility is to maybe tape some clear plastic over the openings to the sink or the bathtub and leave that for a couple days if you can. And then if you notice a fly beneath the plastic, then you know where they're coming from, okay, because that's the only place where they can be. When you notice that, that can be hard to deal with, but you basically have to somehow remove that material, that slimy material that is liming, that is lining the actual pipe. And if you can do that, that's a good way to get rid of those. So you could try that. If you're still having some questions on that, then I would suggest you refer to our entomologist here at Iowa State, and you can call them. Their phone number is 515-294-1101. And that's the number for Entomology Extension here at Iowa State, 294-1101.
All right, Mark, thank you so much for your call. And next up, we've got Linda in Davenport. Hello, Linda.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
I have like 4 apple trees of different varieties in our yard. And this year, every single one of them were just blighted with this gray mold or mildew. It affected the fruit and the leaves of the tree. What should I be doing to get rid of that?
Well, I'm not sure exactly what you're seeing on the fruit. Was it kind of grayish or blackish in color?
Yeah.
Okay. What you may be seeing on the fruit is what we call sooty blotch. Sooty blotch is actually a fungus. It grows on the surface of the apple. It doesn't really harm the apple, but it grows on the surface. And when you have very damp, humid conditions in mid to late summer, it can be extremely severe, where it covers much of the actual apple. And so when you see an apple with sooty blotch, they don't look very appetizing, although you can actually just rub it off, and the apple is perfectly fine to eat. As far as prevention, it's hard to prevent. One thing that you might want to consider doing is maybe go ahead next spring, like in March or April, and maybe doing some thinning, thin out maybe some of the branches. And when you do that, you would have better air circulation. And if you have better air circulation, then the apples will dry off a little bit faster after a rain. And so you may see less of that sooty blotch. The fungicides that you might use in a home orchard spray might be helpful too. So if you're using like a home orchard spray, make sure you spray that on a regular basis, and that may help also.
On the leaves, it most likely was a disease called apple scab, which is pretty common depending on the variety of apples. And that can also cause problems with the apples too, but they often cause kind of a haze look. You get these little blotches of that are dark all over the leaves, and then often it'll cause early defoliation. There's a couple other funguses. Is that kind of what you saw this year? And kind of similar to what Richard said, the thing with those is some of these orchard sprays and stuff that have fungicides, you can use those, but you have to use them as a preventative. So you have to start early in the spring look at the timing. Sometimes the sprays are every 10 to 14 days. Some of these things you're going to have every year depending on the weather. As Richard said, though, a lot of times on some of these, it's more of an aesthetic damage. And as far as the tree goes, that won't kill the tree. They don't look so good. They look a little unhealthy. But come next spring, there should be no negative, major negative effects to that. So, again, depending on the weather, if you have a decent spring next year, not as much moisture, you may not see as much of that disease. But if you want to limit blemishes and some of those impacts, usually a fungicide spray on a fairly regular rotation starting in the spring is needed. Would you agree, Richard?
Correct, yes. It has to be okay. Uniformly applied and done so on a regular basis. And with all the rain this year, that made it extremely hard for a home gardener to do that.
But as Richard said, a lot of these apples are still very edible. You can rub that stuff. A lot of times you can peel it off. You still have a product there. So if you don't spray, you can often end up with a product still.
All right, Linda, thanks a lot for your call. We've got an email from Susan in West Des Moines. She says, a small crab apple and service berry have recently been chomped by the bunnies. They have not completely circled the trunks. They're about a halfway round. I have fenced off the trees, but would wrapping for the winter prevent further damage? If so, with what are the trees doomed?
Well, go ahead, Richard.
they're not doomed as long as part of the trunk or the bark is still intact on that tree or shrub. So if the damage, let's say, is limited to one side and the other side of the stem or trunk is still intact, it's going to survive. But they have to make sure that no additional damage occurs this winter. And so the next few months are going to be critical. So they want to make sure they have something like hardware cloth or chicken wire fencing around those plants, make sure it's high enough that they can't get over it, and they might want to pin it to the ground so they can't crawl underneath it. And if we do have a lot of snow like last winter, they should go out there periodically and make sure they can't get over that fencing with that deep snow. And if they can, then they may have to remove some of that snow so they can't get through that fencing.
And the other thing she'll need to watch over time is that plant may live, but depending on the percent that was damaged, you can often get decay and stuff working that over time. So she'll just have to watch the plant. If it's less than half, a lot of times if the tree stays healthy, it'll actually start to close that wound with what we call callus tissue. So next spring, she watches for that kind of scab-looking growth growing towards the wound. That'll be a good indication that that tree is trying to seal that wound closed. And that's a positive thing.
A good sign of life.
Good sign.
And it does no good to, let's say, paint it with something like a pruning paint or a wound dressing. That does absolutely no good.
And actually, that can actually be more of a negative depending on what material's in that dressing.
Okay. Steve is on the line next in Cedar Falls. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Hi.
I was calling. I heard your earlier talk about Christmas tree farms and so forth, and I always thought that would be fun to do in retirement. But then when I heard that it was sometimes 15 years, I figured I'd better start learning. So how would I go about getting educated and taking classes or looking stuff up on how to start my own Christmas tree farm?
Well, that's a great segue for me because I was going to try to bring this in. There actually is an Iowa Christmas Growers Association in Iowa. And if you go to www.iowachristmastrees.com, they have great information to start. And actually, they have, I believe, two annual meetings. They have a summer meeting and a fall meeting. And usually at those meetings, they actually do a lot of stuff on growing, shearing, all kinds of different topics, marketing. And they often have them, at least their summer meetings, usually at a local Christmas tree farm in Iowa. So you can really start to see there. And then also, if you go to Iowa State Extension Forestry, they often have forestry field days throughout the year, usually during the summer or fall. Sometimes they'll talk about Christmas trees. So the Christmas Tree Growers Association is a great place to start to get some of that information. And there's a number of publications through Extension that talk about species to plant, how to plant, how many per acre, the kind of care that's needed, shearing, timing, all those kind of things, and some of the economic questions that you have to answer as you go through the process.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, and good luck with that, Steve.
Thanks.
You mentioned the iowachristmastrees.com, which is also, if you want to find a Christmas tree farm close to you, they have a guide as well.
Actually, they have right on there, it says find a farm. And if you click on that, you can click, I think you indicate your county or your town.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gives you a local search. And then also the Iowa Department of Ag and Land Stewardship, IDALS for short, they have a search directory on their website also for Christmas tree growers in Iowa.
All right. And we'll put up a link to those sites on our Facebook page and also on our Twitter at IPR Talk as well. And I think we have time for one more question. We've got Karen on the line from Northern Missouri. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I'm in the beginning stages of planning to plant trees in my yard. But I just discovered that I have buried electrical cables in the yard, and I'm told that I need to be careful about what kind of trees I plant so that the roots don't disturb these cables. I need to know if that's true, and if it is, would the trees that I'm thinking of planting there work?
Well,
I'm thinking of planting Colorado blue spruces and globe willows.
What I would do is I would actually talk to the utility company specifically and see what about those lines and stuff would make tree roots dangerous or how far. In general, the farther away you can get, I mean, if you're 20, 30 feet away from where those lines are, in most cases you probably shouldn't have a problem. The other thing is to find out how deep they are. Most tree roots are in the top 2 feet of the soil, and you may get some sinker or anchor roots, but if these lines are much deeper, 4 or 5 feet, you may not have a problem at all.
Okay.
You have anything to add to that, Richard?
Nope. That's basically it.
But I would talk to the utility company and see what their concerns are directly and see how close they recommend planting trees to those lines as far as being underground.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for your call, Karen. And we do have time. The last call. This is Charmaine in Iowa City. Hello, Charmaine.
Hi.
Hi. What's your question?
I have a couple of hoopsie blue spruce in my backyard, about 15 years old, and this summer the inner leaves started to turn a light green and then yellow, and now they're dying off. The outer needles are still okay, and I'm wondering if that's due to a disease or could it be the wet summer?
I think those are both possibilities. There is a needle cast. Rhizosphere needle cast. Typically, that's a disease that turns the needles kind of a purplish color before they fall off. So that's a possibility, I would say. But we also did have a very wet year. In fact, the last 2 years have been very wet, and the spruce trees don't really like wet soil. So that may be a factor, too, where when you have extremely wet soils, that does cause stress. And in response to that stress, trees will tend to drop leaves or needles earlier than normal. So that would be a possibility, too. What you might want to do, possibly, is to send a plant specimen to the ISU Plant Diagnostic Clinic here at Iowa State and have them look at that and see if they can find any sign of rhizosphere needle cast. If not, then I would guess it's more of a soil-related problem.
And the other thing I saw this year, Charmaine, is late summer. And we normally see this on pines, but often evergreens will shed some of their inner needles. So if it was later summer, early fall, this year it actually got a little drier in the fall. I did see some evergreens such as blue spruce and Norway spruce actually shed some of those inner needles this year too.
All right, Charmaine, thank you so much for your call. Mark Vitosh, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Richard Giron, thank you.
Thank you.
Richard Giron is a horticulturist with Iowa State University Extension. Mark Vitosh is a forester with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Lindsay Moon. Technical support from Russell Mansky in Ames. You can listen to the show anytime on our website, iowapublicradio.org. You can also podcast it. And you can send us email anytime at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We are on Twitter at IPR Talk. We're on Facebook. Search for Iowa Public Radio, and we will put up links to the sites we talked about today. I'm Charity Nebbe. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.